Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. I'm Ben.
I'm Kai.
This is podcast number 63 for Wednesday, December 14th, 2011. It's good to have Kai back with us in the studio.
Yay!
Before we take off on Kai's pet topic of the day that we're going to have a lot of fun with, I did want to give one more update about Brad and Tommy. Brad and Tommy, you know, as you're hearing this, at some point in time, Wednesday the 14th, no, I'm confused. See, we're actually, because of the availability of Kai, we're actually recording this on Tuesday for Wednesday. So Tuesday, the 12th, 13th, 1, 2, 5, 7, these numbers, how many of them are there?
1, 2, 3, 5, 4, sir.
On Tuesday the 13th, Tommy and...
Huh? I think I messed up the Monty Python reference. The internet will lynch me now.
On Tuesday the 13th, Brad and Tommy were scheduled to go before the judge in, or as I prefer to refer to him, the nice man in the little black dress in New Hampshire, to try to appeal the restraining order that was issued to keep them off the campus of the... What university is that? Why do I not know this on the top of my head? Oh, no. I'm a terrible host.
You know, at least they don't make the judges wear those long, curly-haired wigs anymore.
No, they should. Plymouth State University. Folks at Plymouth State University, I'm sorry I forgot the name of your university. Anyway, the restraining order keeps...
Wow, I didn't even know the United States had a Plymouth State.
Yeah. Plymouth State University is part of the New Hampshire university system. Anyway, and it's a Plymouth. It's not a Chrysler, and it's not a Dodge. No,
not
actually...
cheap.
Yeah. Actually, Plymouth was owned... Well, never mind.
Oh, it's going to be one of those podcasts.
So Brad and Tommy were supposed to go in front of the funny man in the black dress today to find out if this goofy restraining order was going to be held up or if they're going to toss it out and, you know, actually obey the law.
Right.
So that's supposed to happen on Tuesday. By the time you hear this podcast on Wednesday, it will be a done deal. Mm-hmm. I would like to have already had an update on that, but I don't. So maybe we can have something by Thursday. Brad might call me back, and we might get him on the air for Thursday or Friday. We'll do everything we can to keep you updated on that.
And, you know, you can see the latest news if you go to the Bad Quaker Facebook.
Yeah, actually, we keep... and that's a good time to plug the Bad Quaker Facebook. If you're on Facebook and you're hearing this podcast, go over to Facebook and do a search for badquaker.com, you know, spelled, you know, D-O-T-C-O-M. And look us up and give us a like, and that's a good way to know the things that are happening on a, you know, moment by moment basis that we're doing without waiting for another podcast to come through. Because you might get something from Kai there, you might even get something from our admin, you might get something from me. You never know. Anything can happen.
We're crazy over there.
Crazy Bad Quakers.
Liberty price is so low, you'll think we're crazy.
Before we go, now that we've covered that, and again, before we go into the main topic that we wanted to have some fun with today, I had the opportunity to tell my dad that the podcast has been picked up on the radio now.
Which, actually, he lives near Waverly, doesn't he?
Correct.
And they have a station
there,
in Waverly.
There is a station that does nights and weekends out of Waverly. So, and on top of that, we have a bunch of family in that area. So, hey, all you folks in Waverly.
Family.
We used to live in Waverly.
Mm-hmm.
Over there on the Scioto River.
We saw the president go by in a train.
Yeah, that's right. That was Clinton. Mm-hmm. That was the Clinton days. And we lived on in a little blue house that stuck out over the river. It was quite precarious.
We didn't going to the back portion of.
Yeah, because it wasn't that stable. those were some fun times. So hi, Waverly, and what else? Oh yeah. That I told my dad that we're now on the radio. He was kind of amazed by that, you know. And I said, well, you know, Dad, I've always had a tendency to just ramble on and on and on. And he kind of hesitated for a minute before said, oh well, no, you know. But
well, that's not a stone tree at all. What? No.
So, our main topic of today, or at least the one that we're going to have the most fun with, fascist butter from space.
In Norway.
Norwegian.
Norwegian fascist butter.
Norwegian fascist butter. I should probably pull the story up, huh?
So, I read a number of real food blogs. You know, people who are trying to get other people to actually eat food instead of processed, hydrogenated...
Gobbledygook.
Genetically modified. So, on one of them, they brought up this story that... and they portrayed it in a very positive light. They, you know, they didn't make mention at all about anything relating to the government. They basically just said, Norwegians are eating more butter. Yay, we're eating butter. And because of the wet summer, there's a shortage of butter in Norway. So I was like, you know, yay, Norwegians are eating butter. Go, Norway. And then in researching the issue a little bit more, I realized that the reason that they're having a shortage of butter is because there's only one company authorized to make butter in Norway.
Authorized by Odin?
Yes, Odin. It's Odin's Butter Company.
You know, it might be. No, it's a government authorized because they're fascist. Because it's a fascist government and it's a fascist. They like to call themselves social democrats, but they're liars. It's fascism. Folks, the Germans did not have to... Well, actually, the Germans did occupy Norway for a while, but the Germans didn't have to come in and take over your country. You live in a fascist country right now.
Yep. And so, you know, there was a Russian... There's a story where this Russian was caught...
We had a cat delay there. Go ahead. The Russian was caught.
The Russian was caught smuggling, what, 200 pounds of butter in his car into Norway?
Yeah, 90 kilos.
It.
90 kilos of butter. Hey, man, I got a few kilos of good stuff.
I got some good Russian butter, man.
I got
it's pure Siberian. It's uncut.
Can you take like a kilo? Can you take like a kilo? Because I need to get rid of this. They're on to me. It's butter.
It's butter, people. Butter.
When you outlaw butter, only the outlaws will have butter.
That's where I draw my line.
I draw a line in the sand.
That's right there. You can take my butter when you pry it from my cold, dead hands.
And in Norway, your hands can get really cold in the winter.
I just... That blows my mind. Like, there's... A fascist monopoly on butter. Like, I understand. Okay, I get it. There's kind of a fascist monopoly on butter right now.
In the U.S., sure.
You know, they're subsidizing a specific butter, mm-hmm. you know, and I get it. And we don't have an open butter market.
We have fascist butter in the U.S., absolutely.
But at least we have the illusion of, you know... I can go, and actually, let me bring up this for, because speaking of goofy butter laws.
So, there has to be butter laws. Imagine that.
What kind of world do we live in where we have to have laws regulating butter? It's butter, people. Butter. We're not talking about sodium hydroxide. We're not talking about something that's going to kill people. It's butter. It's just, I made it in my kitchen the other day.
People were eating butter before the state existed.
And they'll be eating butter after the state exists.
When the state is nothing but a bad memory that people talk about, like they're not sure if it really ever existed or not, we'll still have butter.
So, I went to Baltimore mm-hmm. this weekend for a friend's like Christmas party, and we drove through Pennsylvania, and in Pennsylvania they have raw milk legal. So I took the opportunity and I loaded up on some raw milk and I, you know, smuggled it across the state border.
Are you admitting to criminal charges at this point? Would you like to speak with an attorney?
But the funny part is, in Pennsylvania, they can sell raw milk, mm-hmm. but they have to pasteurize butter. They're not allowed to sell raw butter, which I don't what? And cream. They have to pasteurize their cream.
But they can sell you the milk.
They can sell the milk.
And then you can pull the cream out and take part of the cream and make butter and just eat the other cream.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly legal.
Yeah. What? This is what happens with the state. This is what happens. You ever read the book, You Give a Mouse a Cookie?
I don't think so.
You know, there's this whole thing, you give a mouse a cookie, and they're going to want this, and they're going to blah, 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 blah. Well, you give the state any little tiny bit of leeway, and they just take more, and more, and more, and more, and they keep pushing it. And, of course, it's always for your good,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
These laws are always to protect...
Well, they're for the children. It's
yeah,
for the children.
For the children.
For the children. There's one thing to keep in mind, and this Norway situation is the perfect example of it. Fascism. We're talking about fascism. We're not talking about guys with black boots and little mustaches, and we're not talking about invading Poland. That's not what we're talking about. That's not what fascism is.
No.
Fascism existed in Spain. Remember, Spain was fascist at the same time that Nazi Germany was fascist, and the same time Italy was fascist, except...
I think, guess what? At the same time, the United States was fascist.
Exactly. The United States is a fascist government and was under FDR at the time that they were fighting the other fascist governments of Germany and the Italian government. But the Spanish government was a fascist government for years and years and years and still is, but... At the time when they were open about it and they actually admitted it, they were not aggressive toward their neighbors because fascism does not necessarily have to have an aggressive army invading Poland. That's not what fascism is. Fascism is when you have a marriage of the corporate world and the government world.
Yep.
Now, when the corporate world and the government world are working hand in hand to monopolize the market, then you have fascism. Now, that's different from communism, but it's all under the realm of socialism. Now, as I'm just blazing through this rant, this is basic economic stuff, but as I'm blazing through it, keep this in mind. Anytime you have a socialist system, you will have gluts and shortages because the market pressures do not exist, or those market pressures are so fouled up that they can't function correctly when you have socialism. Whether that socialism is in the form of communism or whether that socialism is in the form of fascism, when you have socialism, you have gluts and shortages because there is no price mechanism to drive the market.
And it's actually funny because you can... The Norwegian butter situation is a great example because we're seeing a shortage right now, and it's very likely that within a year or two, we will see an extreme shift, and there will be more butter than, you know, there'll be cheap Norwegian butter flooding the market.
They'll have to float it down the fjords. I'm sorry for any listeners in Norway. I'm sorry. It's just, you know.
But seriously, stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
You are letting your government keep your butter out of your hands. If you can't keep a hold of your butter, what can you keep a hold of? You know?
Keeping in mind, too, we're talking about Norway. We're talking about a culture and a people who at one point in time had Viking settlements on, let's see, three continents that Vikings were living state-free.
Yep.
And in spite of all the lies that history has written, the vast majority of Viking expeditions were not military expeditions.
Yep.
They were peaceful settlements.
Yep. And trading and...
Yeah, and they were essentially non-state all the way up until the Christians took over in Norway.
Which is actually, I wanted to point that out, because prior, this is an interesting phenomenon when you look at history. When you have, generally, the way that his, the
Can I throw a disclaimer?
Yeah, we're going
to... Caution. BadQuaker.com is now wandering into the realm of pagan theology.
Sorry all, about this, folks, but...
All Christians, atheists, and agnostics, and Jews, Muslims, and all other theologies, please breathe slowly. Back to you, Kai.
So here's the thing.
Wait, cat attack. Cat's attacking the microphone. Come on, Baggy.
Come on.
Go ahead, Kai.
So here's the thing. When you look at, and it Norway's a great example, not just Norway.
Scandinavia
is a great example. But you can look at the exact same thing in the Fertile Crescent, in Asia, in...
Across the steppes.
Yeah. Pretty much anywhere. What you begin with is you begin with a religion that has a father god,
mm-hmm.
either a single father god who is the all god,
mm-hmm.
or a head god, mm-hmm. who's the father god.
Zeus-like,
yeah, or Odin-like.
Right.
So you have this father god, and when you have these people who are worshiping the father god, generally speaking, you have a stateless religion.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
the same thing goes in pagan societies where they have a mother goddess.
Exactly. But you have a god who is entirely separate from the humans.
Right.
There
is no state. There is no logical connection between their theology, mm-hmm. their pagan theology, and the legitimacy or illegitimacy of a state.
Exactly.
So there is no state, because there's nothing to place the legitimacy of that state upon.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
And this has an effect of, because you are worshiping this father or mother god, mm-hmm. then you have the natural progression of older members of the tribe being more...
Respected
and in positions of leadership, mm-hmm. but without force being involved.
Right.
Which is a natural human state of affairs.
Yeah, let me throw in something too. I don't want to throw off your direction as you're doing this. I just want to add to it as we go. In a natural tribal setting, you have the wisdom coming from the elders, both the male and female elders,
mm-hmm.
Guiding the younger people. But you have the warrior group. The warrior age is in the 30 to 40 range, not the 20-year-olds.
No.
I'm sorry for 20-year-old listeners. When I was 20, I didn't have the brains to be a warrior. If I was a warrior at 20, which I kind of was in that time frame, you're very unstable and you're liable mm-hmm. to attack anybody. But the true warrior spirit starts to come in maturity in the 30 to 40 range.
Yep.
But without that elder leadership... That's a really dangerous combination. The 30 to 40 leadership is really dangerous, and especially when they manipulate the 20-year-olds. I don't know if that really relates to anything, but in a tribal setting, the elder generation is the prime wisdom leadership, and the warrior generation in the 30s and 40s are held in check through the wisdom of the elders,
mm-hmm.
and the what might be considered the fodder in the time of battle, which is the 20-year-olds, are the ones that are expendable in battle. That's why we throw them into the military today. The 18 to 20-year-olds keep their mouths shut
mm-hmm.
because they haven't developed wisdom yet. So now, I'm sorry to all the younger people, but when I was 18, 19, 20 years old, I was extremely dangerous
mm-hmm.
because I hadn't developed wisdom yet.
Yep.
If you're 20 years old and you're starting to develop wisdom, good for you. You know, I appreciate that because I didn't have that when
gives you a huge head start.
Yeah, I was a loaded cannon ready to take anybody's head off at 20 years old. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I hope I didn't throw you off too much there.
So we've got this situation where we have a natural human leadership situation that's mm-hmm. not propagated through force.
Right, and it's not a state.
Right, and generally speaking, though not always, sometimes
mm-hmm.
this fluctuates, but generally speaking, this goes hand in hand with a father or a mother or an all purpose, mm-hmm. God. But a funny thing happens is, at some point, they introduce what Joseph Campbell calls the hero God.
Mm-hmm.
Hercules, Tammuz, Osiris.
Yeah, there's another one.
There's a Greek version of this that is...
Well...
Adonis.
Okay, yeah.
And there are female versions of this as well. And mm-hmm. generally, there's a male and a female, mm-hmm. you know, version of this together.
Mm-hmm.
One either being the mother of the hero god or the...
Nimrod. Nimrod was another of these gods. Nineveh was named after.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so when this happens, and most of the time it takes place in the form of... a mortal, and this is where, I'm going to get the hate mail for this one. This is where a mortal woman gives birth
typically to... Typically a virgin birth.
Right. Gives birth to
this is, folks, we're in paganism. We're talking about paganism.
Yeah. This is, I mean...
We're talking about ancient Asteria. Is that the pronunciation? Asteria? Or where the word Easter comes from? Was the virgin goddess Asteria or something like that.
I don't know.
Anyway, go ahead.
But this, it's a half-human, half-god person.
Who's born of this woman.
Right. And who either possesses great physical strength or possesses great,
like healing.
Intelligence and healing and, mm-hmm. you know, often the god of the grain.
Yeah.
Or... depending on the culture, either the god of grain or the god of the sheep and the goats, a shepherd god,
mm-hmm.
or the god of olives or the god of the vine,
mm-hmm.
Whatever is important to
that culture.
Mm-hmm. And when this god crops up, when mm-hmm. this god begins to have its cult following...
Uh-huh.
The state is never far behind it.
Yeah. The state uses that theology as its authorization, as its foundation as to why the state is real. If you go, I mentioned Nineveh, the founders of Nineveh claim to be the children of Nimrod
mm-hmm.
Before he, sacrificially died and before his body got chopped up and the priests ate it in the form of little wafers with a T on. Never mind. I didn't say that, by the way.
Yeah. That is nearly central to it because imbibing the flesh of this
mm-hmm.
hero god
mm-hmm.
gives you then... the spirit of this hero god, and it gives you the legitimacy
mm-hmm.
to give orders to other people.
People who know a little bit, maybe here's the whole Sparta thing was a big internet sensation not long ago when the movie came out, 300 mm-hmm. came out, which was being a person who fanatically loves history.
Mm-hmm.
Watching a cartoon version of the 300 was not an acceptable activity for me.
No, and
but
if you enjoy
cartoons, I mean that's fine, or comic books, or right. whatever, that's fine.
The thing with that one was that story is amazing. It is an amazing story.
Yeah, you don't need to Hollywoodize things like that.
And they made it less than what it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, because they made it cartoons and monsters and things. But Sparta, going back to what I started to say, Sparta, according to the legend, was a legitimate city-state. It was a city-state. Now, mm-hmm. keep in mind, these terminologies have meanings. Sparta, like Nineveh, that I mentioned a minute ago, was a city-state. And as a city-state, Sparta got its authority to rule its neighbors because it ruled, it had slave areas that it had conquered and they worked as slaves for the, quote, citizens of mm-hmm. Sparta, where the citizens didn't work. The citizens were citizens. They didn't have to work.
Right.
But the citizens of Sparta were able to do that because they were descendants of Heracles or Hercules.
Yep.
They took their right to be the state and to lord over the fields and over the laborers and over their slaves. They took that right from this legend of Hercules, yep, that was a half god that was born under these circumstances where, you know, anyway, go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That whole exact story. And it's interesting specifically with Scandinavia because they never did that.
Mm-hmm.
They never brought in the hero god.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Odin had sons.
Yeah.
You know, there was Thor, there was Loki, and these are...
But they were battling battling nature. They were battling the forces
Frost
of...
The giants.
Yeah, the forces of the... They were they kept, for centuries, they kept the Ice Age back.
And see what happens? Now the Ice Age is coming back, now there's too wet of a summer, and now there's no butter. See what happens? No, sorry. That was...
A little humor.
A little humor there. Just diffusing the situation
a little. Odin humor.
But, it's really interesting because in the Middle East,
mm-hmm,
had there been these Odin and... or these Loki and Thor characters,
mm-hmm,
they would have been pushed into this hero god,
mm-hmm,
stature. But in Scandinavia, they never were.
That cult never caught on. In Northern, mm-hmm, Europe, really, at all.
And as a result, there wasn't the state there until...
Mm-hmm.
Until the hero god came along and you know... And that is the point where I think a lot of Christians get really mad, is when you say things like...
Yeah.
Christianity is a hero god worship. You know, that's...
But unfortunately, there is this blend, and it started, at some point when, and I'm not saying this to attack Catholicism, mm-hmm, at all, that's not at all my point, but at some point as Christianity and the state began to blend,
mm-hmm,
and then as that two-headed thing started moving across Northern Europe, that introduced the state in a very forceful manner across, mm-hmm, first across Germany and then across Eastern Europe and eventually into Scandinavia, into places where Rome could never have penetrated.
Yep.
Rome's force could never have gone into there and done those things. But by bringing in the theological justification for a state, the state was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the freedom of Norway and the freedom of what the Vikings were doing and how they were spreading, because there were Vikings that were from Sweden, and there were Vikings from Finland, and there were Vikings from what's that called right down there?
Denmark,
yes. There were Danish Vikings. And all that...
A Danish
Viking. Sounds delicious.
What an idea!
The funny thing is, people there don't refer to pastries as being Danish. We here in the United States refer to them as being Danish. So,
yeah, listening in Denmark and you're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's like French toast.
Yeah.
In France, people are like, what are you talking about? It's toast.
What do you call French toast in France? Toast. Actually, that's not true. They call it pain perdu.
Yeah. Anyway, so did we cover that?
Anyway, yeah. That's not to say that hero god worship is bad.
Right.
Just like anything else that the state manipulates, it's not the tool's fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's the hand that, you know, controls the tool. Corporations are not inherently evil.
Mm-hmm.
They are capitalism that has been manipulated by the state.
Yeah.
Governments are not necessarily evil. They're, you know...
Yeah. Unions, labor unions, mm-hmm, are not necessarily evil, but when they utilize the force of the state,
yep,
they begin to take that place. Let's get to a headline, actually. That was one of the things that I wanted to mention, was that there's a... who did this? Oh, Politico. Politico had a story where they said 64% of people surveyed said that big government was the biggest threat to the country, to the U.S., And they compared that to just 26% who felt big business was a grave concern, and 8% who were afraid of the big labor unions. The problem is, when you pick out government and you say, well, government's what I'm afraid of, I'm okay with big corporations and big labor unions. Or you say labor unions are the problem, I'm okay with government, I'm okay with corporations. Or, you know, corporations are okay, or government's okay. Whichever one of these you pick out, you don't realize they're all the same thing. They're all just puppets on a string.
Yeah.
It's the state that's the problem.
This is why the idea of having the government regulate Wall Street or the banks or the labor unions or the big corporations or whatever, it doesn't work, and it can't work because they're all controlled by the same puppeteer.
Yeah. You're talking about the same... they all have the same root problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and this takes us back to what you were talking about with the theology thing there. It's not that Christianity
mm-hmm.
was the evil thing, because if you consider the argument of, well, what about Ireland?
Mm-hmm.
Ireland was introduced to Christianity about between 400 and 600 AD, and they didn't adopt a state until like 1500 when Cromwell invaded.
Yep.
Well, so what's the difference there? Well, the difference is that within their theology, they didn't have that, what you were talking about, that hero god in their theology, that didn't exist in the Celtic myths, in that form anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Catholic moved in, they slowly adopted Catholicism, but they did so in a non-state form.
Yes.
So this supports my argument that it's not necessarily Christianity, it's this blend of using Christianity to give a legitimacy to the government,
mm-hmm.
to give this, not the government, the state, because there was a government in Ireland. There was no state. So when you use any theology, but specifically the hero theology that you're talking about, you use that to justify the existence of the state, then the state moves in.
Right.
It couldn't do that in Ireland. It had to, the state had to move in at the point of the lances of the flat, of the roundheads.
Because that's the thing, you know, the state is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the state,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to justify bringing in the state.
Yeah.
Because it's obvious how evil it is.
Yeah, when you're on the outside looking in, the state, you think to yourself, why would anybody want this?
Mm-hmm. And so you have to, you know, like you're feeding a pill to a dog, you have to wrap it in something that's mm-hmm. actually palatable.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. Or butter. Hmm. So to begin with, to get to plant the seeds of the state, it seems to historically be that they would choose this particular mythology
mm-hmm.
that they could hide the state under and bring it in. And, you know, now we're in a position where it's not associated with that anymore.
Right.
You know, with the exception of a few regions,
mm-hmm.
religion and the state really are not married anymore. And so they've had to take that place. They've had to say, okay, well, we can't make the state palatable with religion anymore. Mm-hmm. What do we cover up the state with now?
Yeah.
And we're moving more and more towards covering it up with corporations.
Yeah.
You know, because the state can't be evil mm-hmm. if you have an Xbox.
Yeah.
It can't be evil if you have a car, two cars, three cars, mm-hmm. you know,
and
a big screen TV.
And how can the state be evil if you get free butter every week in your WIC program?
Right.
And you get, you know, the guy pulls up in front of your house every morning and drops off milk and cereal and butter and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
How can the government be evil?
Yeah.
And that's for people who don't know what WIC is, that's Women and Infant Children. It's a program through the Welfare Department that distributes, they literally have trucks that mm-hmm. pull up in front of people's houses and drop off milk, a thing of oftentimes Kellogg's Corn Flakes or some cereal like that.
Yeah.
And butter and these.
Although most of the time now it's like margarine, butter spread.
Oh, yeah.
It's skim milk, margarine, and cornflakes. Woohoo!
Here, stay alive with that.
Yeah.
But whether it's feeding bread to the masses during
exactly.
the circus.
This is not, we're not talking about something that hasn't already been done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how the state works.
Always.
This is how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
It begins by placing into, by putting into place that the leaders of the state are gods.
Mm-hmm.
And it moves from there, and when it is dying, it tries to keep itself alive by giving its masses food.
Yeah.
Often in the form of grain-based meals.
Yeah. Yeah. Now,
whether this is the rice from Asia, or the wheat from Egypt, or the
corn in Mesoamerica.
Right, or bread, or mm-hmm. oats, or whatever part of the world that your particular grain is from,
mm-hmm.
at some point the state realizes that it's falling apart, its people are on the verge of revolution, we'll give them free food.
Yeah, give them bread. Yep, bread for the masses.
And after that comes revolution.
And there's a reason why why that phrase exists in the English language, bread mm-hmm. for the masses. There's a reason why, because that's what the state always reverts to when it's getting desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people are dependent upon the state's bread, the state thinks they're less likely to revolt.
Yep.
But in fact, at some point, remember what I said about socialism, there's gluts and shortages. At some point, there's going to be a shortage of bread, and when that takes place, then you've got a really nasty revolution.
Which is actually really interesting, physiologically speaking,
mm-hmm.
That they always choose grains, because grains, when your body digests them,
mm-hmm.
that sugar rush that specifically comes from grains, uh-huh. not the sugar that comes from sugar.
Right.
It acts as an opiate in your brain, and it makes you addicted to it.
If you don't think bread is addictive, stop eating it for a week.
Stop eating it for a week.
Just stop all wheat products for 1 week, and your whole outlook will change on this mm-hmm. topic. That is absolute truth. I have been, because of health conditions, I have been on, not right now, I'm not on any at this moment today, but when I was really in my worst condition, I was on Kadian. I was administered Kadian because of the pain levels that I was experiencing. And oftentimes they only give Kadian to terminal cancer mm-hmm. patients. Not always, but oftentimes Kadian is because it's a time-released morphine. And so I was in levels of pain that required the doctor to give me, I was on Kadian 24 hours a day.
Right.
So you never come off of it. And after being on morphine for months, and then I decided in my mind, I wonder what everybody talks about the withdrawal symptoms. I wonder what the withdrawal symptoms are going to be like. So I played around a little bit and I took myself off just to experience what the withdrawal symptoms are like. And they're not pleasant.
Right.
But now, when I cut myself off from wheat, I can say that the withdrawal symptoms from wheat are extremely similar
mm-hmm.
to the withdrawal symptoms from
morphine.
From morphine. Did I say heroin?
Nearly the same thing.
they're all opiates.
Yeah.
But morphine is the legal version, and that's what Kadian is. It's a time-released morphine. And the withdrawal symptoms of bread, of wheat products, are very similar to the withdrawal symptoms of morphine, of time-released morphine.
Yep.
Except bread is not as well time-released as Kadian.
I see this all the time. People are like, I have to eat I have to eat a small meal every 3 hours or else my blood sugar, I want to keep my blood sugar stable.
Yeah.
No! Stop that!
Well, it's the wheat that's
causing
that.
You have to give yourself a kick every 3 hours. Otherwise, you go into withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah, you got to have some smack.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's like any other addict, really.
Yeah.
And that's why Gary Busey endorses Newt Gingrich for president.
Because he's all hopped up on the bread.
And Newt will give you bread.
And butter. There's plenty of butter.
I don't think Newt is a real candidate. Let me totally change the topic. We can come back to bread and Odin and Tammuz. But Bread and Tamils and Odin, oh my.
Oh my.
I don't think Newt Gingrich is a real candidate. I think the GOP...
Well, no, he's a reptile person.
Well, that's true, yes. He changes if you watch him. somebody out there is like, yeah, I know.
No, that's right.
But I think Newt, I think the Newt.
The Newt.
I think he's bait.
Who names their kid Newt?
Somebody really mean. Well, okay, I could be nasty because he had a horrible, you know, your stereotypical trailer type white trash origin. Mm-hmm. He had a really rough life to start off with. So, however evil Newt is, you look back on his childhood and you're like, no wonder.
Right.
I mean, the guy, you know, had a horrible childhood. That's not to say that, you know, everybody living in a mobile home is evil or anything like that, but there are in certain levels of poverty in the white community in the U.S., there are people that are really struggling hard, mm-hmm. and that's what Newt came out of. And sometimes that can make a person who's a really good person, mm-hmm. or it can make a person who's really not a good person.
Right.
And I think that's what it produced in Newt. But anyway, I hope I didn't say that in too offensive fashion. But after all, yesterday I was bashing the Baptists, or day before yesterday I was bashing the Baptists. So here we have attacked Christianity, now I'm going after white people, and it just never ends.
And look, we've lost all sponsorship, and we're no longer...
Yeah, and the Liberty Radio Network kicks us off because they don't even want us broadcasting in Waverly anymore. But, no, I was taking that somewhere right. in reference to... Oh, the Republican... I believe this. I believe that the GOP, the radical statist end of the Republican Party, has thrown Newt up there to keep the pressure off of their real candidate, who is Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. I think Mitt Romney is the person they've wanted to run against Obama.
I think Mitt Romney's got the best chance against Obama.
Well, I think he's who the Republicans are eventually going to settle into. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Republicans have no intention of beating Obama. And here's why. I think in 1996, when the Republicans put Bob Dole up against Bill Clinton... It's like, okay, we can pick the angry old man who is partially disabled and growls and grumbles, mm-hmm. or we can pick the young, dynamic individual that speaks well and everybody loves. So Bill Clinton got elected again.
Right.
Well, duh.
Right.
How did that happen? And then along comes the 2000 election, and the Republicans now have this storm that they were able to come back in, and they totally dominated both houses and the presidency.
Well, you know, even in the 2000 election, with it being as close as it was, mm-hmm. you still had this kind of fringe leftist environmental nut job. Mm-hmm. Like, he got worse after he lost that election,
yeah.
but he was still that person yeah. versus this good old boy hometown
yeah.
favorite.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was very clear what was going to win.
Yeah.
And then, you know, again, you have, who went up against?
Kerry, the rich elitist, who was like...
The old man, rich elitist.
Yeah, and a joke, and like, yeah. you know, parasailing in his, or not parasailing, what was it, what's that called? Windsurfing in his tidies. And he's an old man, and you know,
yeah.
and heir to whatever, and yeah. you know. But then, in the 2008 election, what do we have again? We have the same formula as 2006. We have this old, disabled veteran who was angry about everything, going mm-hmm. up against this young, handsome, well-spoken man.
Yeah.
So who are they going to vote for? And this is nothing against disabled. I'm disabled, so I can use the word disabled. Shut up, anybody who's mad at me for using the word disabled. I can use that word. Anyway.
And if you don't think he can, he'll brandish his cane at you.
Yeah, I'll hit you with my cane right now. You come over here.
Get off his lawn.
But, so... I believe that the Republicans threw the 2008 election, just like they threw the 1996 election, and I think they're going to throw the 2012 election so that they can get more seats in Congress mm-hmm. and then come back in the next election and have a full Congress, all Republican with a president who's Republican, and then we've got some serious problems on our hands.
Right.
If you people forget the direction that George W. Bush was taking this country, because Obama flushed it down the toilet so bad that we forget that the toilet was swirling already when Obama took over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, these guys are hand in hand. This is all going in the same direction.
Yep.
There, it's just, you know, one gang of thieves robbing you, or the same gang of thieves with a different letter before their name robbing you.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, I don't know how I got off on that.
Gary Busey is endorsing Newt Gingrich.
That's how I got off on it.
Which, Newt's a lizard. You don't even really have to make fun of that. You don't have to go into it with great detail. You just have to make the statement, Gary Busey's endorsing Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, it's kind of like saying, to get to the other side. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you say that, everybody knows that you just referenced the chicken crossing the street joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or any of a number of knock-knock jokes that you could do the same thing with. It's the punchline, Gary Busey endorses Newt Gingrich. Ha, 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 ha. You don't even have to tell the joke.
No.
The punchline's enough.
It's just... Of course he is. Why wouldn't he be?
So then...
Well, you know, he wants to get in good with the lizard overlords.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Anyway. So there's that. That's happening.
Baggy the cat's attacking the microphone again. And we're clear.
All right, so we've thoroughly offended everyone in the universe. Is there anyone left to beat up?
Well, we haven't attacked the Mormons. And it would be a good chance to actually defend the Mormons, because...
It would, actually. You know...
Well, for anybody that doesn't know it, the Oath Keepers is an organization that utilizes a membership of... either current or former duty, law enforcement, emergency personnel, military personnel, or anyone sympathetic to that can join the Oath Keepers. And their premise is that they took an oath to uphold and to protect the Constitution of the United States, and they want to say that they still stand on that oath, and that they will not follow orders that violate that oath to the Constitution.
Right, which, you know, there are a number of issues just with that right there.
Yeah, and I'm biased on that because, as I've written in my article, I think it was called something like The Taking and the Keeping of Oaths, or mm-hmm. something like that. You know, Quakers are opposed to oaths. We don't take oaths. We see oaths as being not only a direct violation of Scripture, but silly and insultive.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to raise my hand and say magic words to prove that I'm telling the truth, then how valuable is my word when I don't raise my hand and say magic words?
Right.
And if my word is not valuable enough on its own, without the magic words and the raising of the hands or whatever, or the moving of my body parts in some magic way, putting my hand over my heart or taking off my hat or doing any of these magic hand motions,
mm-hmm.
if my word is not valuable on its own, how is it that doing that little operation all of a sudden makes my word valuable?
Right, or standing in a specific... You know, in front of a specific person or in a specific building.
Or holding a book of some kind, any particular object, or looking at a flag or any other object, or standing in front of a funny costumed individual wearing a black dress and saying these magic words. It doesn't affect it.
Right.
So for me, an oath is almost a laughable prospect to begin with.
So, you know, that's half of the issue. And then the other half of the issue is that it's twofold. Firstly, you're taking an oath to not violate the Constitution. Well, one, you can't.
Yeah.
You have to violate the Constitution. Every single person violates the Constitution every single day. Do you pay taxes? Do you pay income taxes? Hey, guess what? You violate the Constitution.
Plus, let's go to Lysander Spooner's argument about the Constitution. I didn't sign it. Did you sign it?
Right.
I don't know anybody that signed it. I don't know if anybody signed it. Not only that, the government is not bound by it. No one in government is bound by it because no one in government signed it.
Yeah.
It is not a valid contract.
Yeah.
It's not a valid contract, then what is it? Who authorized it? Nobody I know. Mm-hmm. Nobody in Congress today has authorized it. And there's no punishment process when they break it. They break it on a daily basis.
When, let's say that you decide that you want to move to Acapulco mm-hmm. and retire. Mm-hmm. And you think, hey, you know what? I'm going to give the deed to my property to my daughter. So you take the deed to your property and you sign it over to me.
Uh-huh.
But that I have to sign it too.
Right.
So that it comes into my possession.
Yeah, you have to agree to that.
I can't just move into the house and say, well, now I'm the head of household. And as head of household, it falls upon me to follow that deed.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work that way.
And that's a good point. Let me take that same point in a different direction. Let's say, as your father, I make a contract with somebody that every Tuesday I will come to their house and drop off milk from my cow. Mm-hmm. Let's just say, I don't own a cow. I'd like to have a cow, but let's say I have a cow.
The closest we've got is a black and white spotted dog.
Who likes to lay on his back in the sun. Anyway, so let's say that I have a contract with this person. Let's say I have a contract with Bill. I always like to use Bill and Bob and Jack and these names. So, well, I've got a contract with Bill. And every Tuesday, the contract says, I will bring a quart of milk to Bill's house and put it on his porch. Mm-hmm. And every Thursday, he gives me a check for the cost of the milk that mm-hmm. we've agreed on. Now, I have a contract with him. I've signed it.
Right.
And there is a clause in that that says that if I fail to bring the milk, that I have to refund him a month's worth of the cost of the milk.
Mm-hmm.
So that way it provides me an incentive to always bring the milk on Tuesdays.
Right.
Now, on the other hand, I have a clause in there protecting me that says that check will always be available for me by Thursday. Otherwise, you double the price.
Right.
Now, so we have a contract.
Right.
This is a basic contract that a person might enter into. One day, I die.
Right.
Could we logically expect Bill to then sue you, Kai, my daughter, who lives in a totally different town and doesn't own a cow? Could we expect Bill to sue you and expect you to hold to the contract that I signed to? Well, of course not.
Right.
No court in existence would hold up such a ridiculous claim. And yet, 250 years ago or whatever, some guys said stuff.
I'm not even related to.
Yeah. No, not at all. We don't have anybody in our family who had anything to do with that. Some guys said some stuff and scribbled on a paper. And how am I bound by that rule now?
Yeah.
What's the connection to me? Oh, well, the connection is that the government of the United States, based in Washington, D.C., with the power of the state, is going to say to me that they're going to use that as an excuse for their behavior, and if I don't like it, they'll send a team into my house, and if I resist, they'll kill me. Mm-hmm. That's how it relates to me. That's how the Constitution relates to me. That's how this oath relates to me.
Mm-hmm.
That if I don't recognize it, they'll ultimately, in the end, they will send people into my house. And if I resist, I die.
Yeah.
And that's how the real contract works. Yeah. That's your social contract right there. Anyway. Don't get me started.
So anyway, these people send
out. I forgot all about the Oath Keepers.
Got ranting on the Constitution there.
Yeah. So
we'll have to make this very quick.
Yeah. So last week, the Oath Keepers sent out an email that caused a lot of panic, and they accused the government of going to a Mormon food bank and demanding lists of names of people who use the food bank. And according to the story, the Mormons refused. And then
said, you know, we don't keep lists. We do it only cash. And
On the other hand, good, solid people who are not a part of either group mm-hmm. went to verify this and said the Mormons at these food banks are saying that nothing like this happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have the choice of believing the Oath Keepers who say now that their source really did tell the truth, but he was maybe intimidated, and we have other groups like Natural News and all these others that are kind of coming down one way or the other on this,
mm-hmm.
and it's really hard to tell what the real truth is. But we're kind of inferred that maybe government
has hushed this up.
Yeah, that there's intimidation involved. But the problem with that is this doesn't really fit the Mormons that I've encountered.
No.
And this doesn't fit the Mormon theology as I understand it. My understanding of Mormon theology and my experience with the Mormons that I've known personally is that if the government was to come to them and demand that they give a list of their people that you know, do business with their food bank, that would exactly fit what they've been expecting to happen for a long time. It's why they store food.
Right.
So they wouldn't just cower to the government like this and hide the story. They would be honest about it. And I have to say, I actually, in the Mormons that I've known, I don't know of any Mormon that had a tendency to lie anyway.
Mm-mm.
So in this situation, I have to take the word of the Mormons. Right. Even though I'd like to think, yes, the government's evil, they came and did this. I'd like to think that. I can't.
Right.
I have to accept exactly what the Mormons said because I trust them because I've never been lied to that I know of by a Mormon.
Yeah, as opposed to lobbyist groups.
Yeah.
That lie on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And this isn't to say that the Oath Keepers lie on a regular basis. This is just to say that the Oath Keepers are a lobbyist group, and lobbyist groups lie.
And the premise, I think, of the Oath Keepers is not as intellectually, I'm not saying they're dumb. That's not my point. I'm saying that they don't have the foundation in logic that you know, that would cause me to have confidence in their story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying any particular person is a liar, but I'm saying the story stinks.
Yeah,
and it started with the Oath Keepers. And so I have to wonder, you know, if you follow a smell back far enough. Anyway, so we've almost run out of time. Is there anything else you want to add to this mess before we still got time to offend one more group? Who's left that we can offend? I don't think we offended the Mormons. I hope we didn't.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Hey, Mormons. Woohoo, rock on. But, I don't think so.
Well, then, let's just wrap it up with telling people that you can get over to our website at badquaker.com. We really do appreciate you listening to us. We appreciate...
And, you know, despite the fact that a couple of the podcasts here within the last week or so have had religious tones to it, as a whole, we don't do that every day.
Yeah,
you know, we talk about a lot of things. And we've got a couple of podcasts coming up that don't touch on religion at all.
Yeah, actually, let's tease for that. We have a podcast coming up that we're going to do pretty soon. I'm not sure exactly when we're going to air this, that goes on the topic of living, the family, the libertarian or the anarcho-capitalist family. And this is we'll be able to cover all the way from early family through the maturity of a family and even the latter years of a family, coming from an anarcho-capitalist or libertarian point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And that is embracing the what I refer to as the zero aggression principle. And
I like the non-aggression principle. I think naps are better than zaps.
And I like zaps.
Folks, so anyway.
Thanks again for listening to BadQuaker.com podcast. Be sure and get over to BadQuaker.com and check out the website. You can send your feedback to me, Ben, at BadQuaker.com, or...
me, Kai, K-I, at BadQuaker.com.
Thanks, folks. Here comes the music. Here comes the music. Oh, no. Oh, grenades is invading us with their music. They're beat. They're beat. Ah.